Welcome to Healthy Versus Toxic, the podcast where licensed mental health professionals explore what makes a relationship healthy or unhealthy or even abusive, all from a scientifically informed perspective.
Well, this is Dr. Grande. Today's question asks if I can talk about forgiving the narcissist. Some other questions I see on the same topic would be, is forgiving the narcissist possible? Is it necessary? Is it helpful? How is it done? And I receive the same questions about forgetting as well. So forgiving and forgetting. So first, it's important to understand the effect of wrongdoing when looking at the topic of forgiveness. Without wrongdoing, or at least the sense that somebody has committed wrongdoing, forgiveness is not possible. I'm not aware of any studies that specifically look at how many people harbor ill feelings toward narcissists, but just to have something to compare, we know that many divorces are contentious. 30% of men and 40% of women who are divorced report hating their spouse when they're asked about it 10 years after the divorce. Now, in a sense, of course, this is understandable if we consider some of the situations that lead to divorce. Poor money management, narcissism, substance use, manipulation, infidelity, verbal and physical harm, and broken promises. And if we look at some of the consequences of divorce, a lower standard of living, and an increased risk for mental and physical health problems. Also, isolation is a consequence of divorce in a number of cases. So an important note here, some of these people hate for understandable reasons. Others probably hate their spouses for other reasons. Misperception, perhaps their own contribution to the divorce that may have been significant, but they don't want to admit that, and a variety of other reasons. So it's not always justified. But either way, whatever causes the hate, we know that there's a lot of it. And we know that forgiveness is one of the ideas that's brought up frequently when people talk about healing from that hate. Now, before we get into the definition of forgiveness, is it even worth talking about forgiveness? So the question here would be, is forgiveness a successful strategy? Well, forgiveness is associated with decreased mental and physical health problems. On the mental health side specifically, we see lower anxiety, lower depression, reduced anger, more hopefulness, and an increased sense of well-being. Being willing to forgive, just that factor itself, is predictive of better relationships, especially long-term relationships. So now moving to the definition, what is forgiveness? There is no single agreed-upon definition, and there's actually a lot of controversy over how we conceptualize forgiveness. We see that one conceptualization would be letting go of negative thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. So this is called the absence of negative. And relating positively toward the offender. This is called the presence of positive. So essentially, forgiveness is eliminating negative thoughts, feelings, and behaviors directed at the offender and developing positive thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Another conceptualization deals with what's called therapeutic forgiveness. This is the type of forgiveness we usually talk about in the context of mental health counseling. Therapeutic forgiveness does not have a restorative component. That type of forgiveness is called redemptive forgiveness. Redemptive forgiveness involves healing and a return to wholeness. It emphasizes a theological reflection and incorporates the idea of divine forgiveness. Now, therapeutic forgiveness is also not a legal pardon. This type of forgiveness is actually called forensic forgiveness. Here we see a transaction that alleviates the penalty for an offense. So the offender makes some sort of penance and the offended party gives forgiveness. So therapeutic forgiveness is not the same thing as reconciliation. It's not forgetting. And on that topic of forgetting, what about forgetting? Can't simply forgetting work just as well as forgiving? Most counselors agree that forgetting is really not enough because forgetting doesn't have this idea that the responsible party is held accountable, and that seems to be important in terms of seeing a recovery, at least in many cases. So therapeutic forgiveness really has three stages. The first stage is lamenting over the wrongdoing. So essentially experiencing the emotional pain from being the victim. The second stage is empathy. So this is seeing the offender in his or her own personal context. So understanding the point of view of the offender. This is one of the reasons why narcissists have trouble forgiving. because they can't complete this empathy stage. Now, the third stage is developing a lifestyle of forgiveness. So living your life being a forgiving person by extending forgiving behavior beyond the specific offense or offender. So the victim really embodies the virtue of forgiveness. Now, there are a number of other definitions for forgiveness as well, but to sum it up, many definitions move away from what I just described here as therapeutic forgiveness, and they talk about repairing the relationship with the offender. But is this really necessary? Do you have to love somebody to forgive them? Do you even need to have contact with the person at all?
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence. And give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
So looking at this, there are a lot of different opinions on what has to be done and what shouldn't be done in order to forgive. So here are some of my thoughts, how I think about forgiveness specifically when talking about forgiving the narcissist. Now, forgiveness can involve a lot of different components, different levels, like I mentioned reconciliation or no reconciliation. Forming a new relationship with the narcissist could be one part of forgiveness. But for what I'm describing here, I will focus on the idea of someone who has left the narcissist, there is no contact whatsoever, and there's no intent to return to that relationship. And yet, this person is still suffering from that relationship. So starting at this point, what constitutes a relationship? I think people become frustrated because when they leave the narcissist, they think, okay, now the relationship is over. Why does this still hurt? Well, it hurts for a variety of reasons, but among them would be that it only takes one person to form and maintain a relationship. Relationships don't end simply because a person is gone, and I've seen this many times. In the research literature, we see this idea of continuous bonds, and this is studied mostly in the context of a person who has lost a loved one, and the results are mixed in terms of whether this is healthy or not. But either way, it does exist, and it exists not just in bereavement situations, but in situations where the other person is still alive, whether that person was a wrongdoer or not. So a relationship can definitely be one-sided, meaning there can be an investment by only one person, and that still counts as a relationship. Actually, it can be completely one-sided. We see this with extreme narcissism. Someone is in a relationship with someone else who has extreme narcissistic traits. So yes, there are technically two people, but there's no reciprocity. The narcissist only cares about himself or herself, and the other person cares about both people in the relationship. So the relationship with the narcissist continues even when the narcissist is out of somebody's life, in the sense that the person doesn't have any contact with that narcissist anymore. So then the question becomes, what can we do with that relationship? Can it truly end? Can it be contained? Is forgiveness possible, necessary, or helpful? So possible, I would say in many situations, yes, of course. Necessary, in some situations, probably. And I would say the same thing for it being helpful. In some situations, it would be helpful. So how is it done? This is a question I've received many times. I'll bring up the topic of forgiveness, and someone will say, that sounds wonderful. I've heard other people talk about forgiveness, but how do you actually do it? And I hear this response more when reconciliation is not a possibility for any number of reasons, and when somebody doesn't want to empathize with the offender, which is an important consideration. not everybody wants to empathize with the narcissist, or not everybody is ready to empathize. So is that necessary for forgiveness? Does somebody have to be willing to empathize? Because that, again, is kind of a big step. Empathizing, understanding someone else's worldview is, I think, kind of a major therapeutic stage that not everybody's going to reach. Some people never reach it, and for others, it takes a long time. So here's what I think about this. At a very basic level, forgiveness is actually fairly similar to rejection. Rejection often has this negative connotation. It's bad to reject people. It's bad to be rejected. But how many times have people applied for, say, a job at a company and not been hired? That's a rejection. The person who worked for that company that didn't hire the other person is not investing energy. They're not investing thoughts, feelings, and behaviors in that person that they rejected. They've moved on, and they likely wouldn't remember most of the people that they rejected. But maybe that seems a bit cold, like employment really isn't about emotions or romantic love. Well, how many times has the average person been rejected by a potential romantic partner? Certainly that's personal and emotional. Are all those people that rejected one person thinking about that person all the time? Certainly those people who rejected other people have moved on as well. One could argue that the main difference between forgiveness and rejection is that rejection doesn't have positive emotions directed toward the offender. And of course, those positive emotions would be hard to achieve without empathy. Rejection does, however, have the lack of negative emotions, and that's a start. And again, for many people, that's probably also the end. That's as far as they're going to get in terms of recovery. We always hope for a more complete recovery, but we have to work within the ranges that people can actually achieve, right? So what they're really ready for therapeutically. Rejection, as I conceptualize it here, is not mean, angry, malicious. It's not done out of hatred. Rather, it's pragmatic, direct, and in a sense, much more achievable for some people than forgiveness would be. Rejecting the narcissist isn't done to hurt the narcissist. Rather, it's done to free the victim, from negative thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Rejection is really a failure to invest in those elements and a failure to invest time and energy in that relationship. It's when a victim chooses to be uninterested in the narcissist. Now, this lack of interest doesn't mean that the memories go away. Rejection is not the same thing as forgetting. It doesn't mean that the learning goes away either. The lessons learned from a relationship with the narcissist can prevent future pain, so it's actually pretty important that those memories stay around to some degree. It doesn't mean that someone stops learning about narcissism or other destructive traits. Again, that can be helpful. But rather, it means that an individual rejects that one specific narcissist. In a sense, rejection maybe can lead to forgiveness, but hatred can't lead to forgiveness. So even though rejection seems like, again, it has this negative connotation to it, it actually has a much clearer path to forgiveness. If someone is struggling with a past relationship with a narcissist or even a present one, it's a good idea to see a counselor. A counselor can help somebody decide if forgiveness makes sense, if failing to invest in a relationship makes sense, what I've described as rejection, or to find other strategies that are appropriate for a given person's situation.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of Ars Longa Media. The executive producer is Dr. Patrick Beeman. For more content, please visit our website at arslonga.media. To leave feedback or suggestions, send an email to info@arslonga.media. To find more content from Dr. Grande, including a link to his YouTube channel and his other Ars Longa podcasts, visit our website at arslonga.media. This podcast is intended for informational purposes only and should not be construed as medical or mental health advice. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Hi there, I'm Heather Drago.
And I'm Sarah Saunders.
We host the podcast, That's a Hard No, about saying no and setting boundaries.
So you can become that true and empowered you that this world needs. Saying no isn't just okay.
It's the key to living an authentic, fulfilling life.
I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor, so while this podcast is in no way a replacement for one-on-one therapy, I suppose I know what I'm talking about.
I'd say so. We talk about learning to say no and set healthy boundaries and how it impacts mental health, physical health, relationships, parenthood, and more.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit our website, hardnopodcast.com.
We're here to help you find your no and say it unapologetically.
That's a hard no.